My Music. A panel game devised by Tony Schrein and Edward J. Mason. Chairman, Steve Race.
We've been together now for 23 years, and it don't seem a day too much. Quarter of a century too much, perhaps, but it's too late to change now. Too late to change also the My Music participants, John Amis, Frank Muir, Ian Wallace and Dennis Norton. John, a double question. Who's the composer and what is or was a knack?
My knack for ladies, cheap choice, brave and new, good penny works, but money cannot move. I keep a fair, but for the fair to view, a beggar may be liberal of love.
Poser?
I imagine you have to put a nick in front of it.
Nick?
Fine knick-knacks for ladies.
They're meaning a...
Gewgaws.
Yes, a pretty contrivance, a toy.
Yes.
Fine knacks for ladies. Who's the composer, though?
Oh, well, it's one of those Elizabethan composers, isn't it? Sort of will be Morley.
Keep
Morley?
Keep going. No, just keep going.
Gibbons.
No.
Talis.
No.
Bird.
No.
Henry VIII.
Jenkins, Wilkins.
No, it was
Andrew Lloyd Dowland.
Andrew Lloyd Dowland it was. No, John Dowland.
Oh, really? Oh, so well, it is, yes. Of course.
You got half a
he mark. He won't forgive me in a hurry.
Frank, have a shot at which instruments are playing this piece. Got five Comet. Listed here. Instruments.
There's recorders.
Mm, yes.
There's a trumpet of some sort.
Of a sort, yes.
Cornet.
Yes.
My
cornet,
friend says.
Alto and tenor recorders. Two others.
Sort of synthesizer.
A very early medieval synthesizer. Yeah. You're certainly near enough. The others were the sackbut and the bass kirtle. Frank.
Bass kirtle?
Kirtle, yeah. When I tell you, Frank,
that
piece is named after a place near your home, can you name it, please?
Virginia Water Music.
That's very good on the spur of the moment. It's actually called Staines Morris.
It's not.
Yes, it is. Staines Morris. Ian, who is declaring love for whom?
Undine, felice,
who loves who?
I would say that it is Luciano Pavarotti, thinly disguised as Alfredo.
Yes.
declaring his genuine love for Violetta.
Who was Dame Sutherland, Dame John Sutherland,
uh-huh.
Didn't
In La Traviata.
Oh, thank you, yes, lovely. That's the way to answer the question. Beautiful. Dennis, I apologise for involving you in sexism, but I have two recordings of a jazz piece called Errol's Bounce. One played by the composer, Errol Garner, and the other by a lady pianist, Joanna McGregor. Point is, which is which? Which is the man and which is the woman, and how can you tell? Number one... Number two. Dennis. Which is which?
Well, there are two clues. Speaking as a complete musical ignoramus, the kind of resident ignoramus on this thing, the second one seemed to be, I don't know, the word we used to use was swing more, seemed to be relaxed.
Exactly,
and so on.
Yes.
But also knowing what a sweet old-fashioned thing you are, despite your contemporary talk about sexism, I know nothing would force you not to put the lady first. So...
How clever you are. Yes, that's right. Yes, Joanna McGregor playing it beautifully with some delicacy first, and then the composer Errol Garner playing it with great swing and no delicacy. It was Errol Garner last and the lady first. I quote the song line, you tell me please what song it comes from. In your case, John, you may not know the song at all, but I think you can guess it from the way I read out the line. Buck dance, wing dance, will be your back number. Ba-ba-ba-ba.
Da-da-da-da-da-da-da.
Yes, that's right. Tell him, Frank, can you? It's the...
Well, syncopation. Of the number, that's
You haven't
Charleston.
Got it, have you? No.
Charleston.
Too late, it's the Charleston. Yes, the Charleston. Frank, your turn. What's the use of prohibition, Frank? What's the use of prohibition?
What's the use of prohibition? Da-da-da-da-da. Charleston. Wouldn't be twice, would it?
Wouldn't be surprising, would it? No, something.
Well, a rhythmic number.
It's, that one.
Oh, Crazy Rhythm.
Crazy Rhythm, all right, yes. Ian, the battle has been won, the enemy is out of sight.
Charge of the Light Brigade?
No, it's rather more domestic than that. Do you know it?
Put away your soldiers.
Yes.
Oh. Little man, you've had a busy day.
Yes. Dennis, by 8, the morning fog must disappear.
In Camelot.
In Camelot, yes.
Yeah. In San Francisco, the morning fog would fill the air.
Yes, yeah, that's right, in the verse, yes. I've been enjoying reading an anthology of musical criticism by Norman DeMuth and pinching bits out of it. In each case, I'm going to read you a bit of reckless criticism and then ask you to which piece of music you think the description applied. John, this was Samuel Butler. I have not a good word for it. If the subject of the last movement were the tune of one of the Arthur Roberts comic music hall songs, it would do very nicely, and I dare say we should hum it. Can you hum it, John? What would that apply to? Just a guess.
No.
No.
In a word?
Well, I'll tell
you. Which Samuel Butler is this?
Samuel Butler, the one who did the notebooks.
Ah, yes, the later one.
Hmm. Well, I'll tell you what it was. It was this. Beethoven Violin Concerto, so he was wrong. Frank, you have several times quoted Ruskin on the subject of Beethoven. Try this, it's John Ruskin again. Of all the clumsy, blundering, baboon-blooded stuff... Pardon?
Meistersingers.
Meistersingers Overture.
But
see if you're right.
Meistersingers.
Let's see if you're right. Yes, it was the Overture to the Master Singers. Ian, this was from a critic called W.H. Glover. Destitute of melody, extremely bad in harmony, utterly incoherent in form. What might that have been?
I wish I could shimmy like my sister Kate.
Well...
What period is this?
Oh, sort of last century, anyway. Yeah. Second half.
1812 Overture?
No, no, no. You got the right man. Bad in harmony, destitute of melody. Unbelievably, it was this. The Fantasy Overture to Romeo and Juliet, Tchaikovsky. Dennis, not precisely your musical scene, but have a stab at it. Another music critic wrote, if this symphony is not by some means abridged, it will soon fall into disuse. Which symphony, Dennis? Rather a heroic one.
You're tempering the wind, aren't you? I don't know any... All I know about symphonies is what I... pick up by listening to John Amos on the wireless. But I don't know. I would say Eroica from your rather heavy clue.
Yeah, thank you. Here's a nice bit from it. Ah, lovely horn passage from Beethoven's...
All I know about that one, you see, is that it's the one that provokes John every time it's played to do a horn impression. He does.
You can't really listen to that without going papaya, papaya, yeah, papaya, yeah, can you? It's nice. Whoever would believe that you could identify a popular song from just two words, and those two words taken not from the chorus or the refrain, but from the verse? Well, you can. Now's your chance to prove it. John, herring boxes from the verse of what? Herring boxes.
Without tops, yes, Clementine.
Clementine, yes. Don't. Herring boxes without tops. Sandals were to Clementine.
The trouble is that with Frank singing about three lines of it, I still can't tell what song it is.
Frank,
it's a very nice thing to say, really. Clementine.
Oh, thank you.
Frank, two words, three syllables altogether. I can play them on the piano if you wish, but you might guess anyway. He's crying.
Play them on the piano. You're gonna go where you are.
Tickety boop.
Yeah, you didn't really guess it, did you? No, it's
Chloe.
Chloe, that's right. Ian, Mr. Man.
Mr. Man.
Shall I play you the phrase as I did for Frank?
Mm. Oh, is it Can't Help Loving?
Yeah,
that's right.
Comes from mine. Verse, yes, that's right. Dennis, in a verse, remember, Plymouth Rock.
Oh, is it that? Is that the one about the Plymouth Rock would fall on them?
Yes.
Yeah. Anything Goes.
It's from the verse of Anything Goes, that's right. Listen to a few bars of Louis Armstrong's Hot Five, recorded back in 1926, but recently smartened up from the technological point of view. One of the early British jazz critics, actually it was Spike Hughes, maintained that Louis Armstrong's early records should never be listened to on anything but a tinny old wind-up gramophone. It's a memory of his own undergraduate days, I suspect. I wonder how you feel about that. Does Louis Armstrong's Hot Five call for tinny reproduction, or does all music deserve the best?
Well, I suppose Spike Hughes is just going back to the time when he first heard them.
Mm, yeah.
I mean, I think most things need fairly decent reproduction, but I'm not one of these gramophone boys who say, you know, oh, light in bass or the middle, that sort of stuff. I'm interested in the music, and I don't care so much about the reproduction.
So you'd say all music deserves the best reproduction?
Yes.
Yeah. I think it's insulting to the composers say that we prefer them badly played on inadequate
instruments. Anybody dissent from that? Or
what they do technologically is something which doesn't exist when you hear something as a human being.
Yes,
they lose the human scale of it. There's a kind of coldness of perfection.
Like the two hi-fi enthusiasts who went to a concert for the first time. And one said, well, what do you think, Bert? And he said, well, not really enough presence.
Yes.
We'll leave the subject on that gorgeous story, I think. Lovely. They called themselves the Cambridge Buskers, two very clever young men. Successful, too, when you recall that their first public performance was in the subway at Blackfriars Tube Station. So, here they are, the Cambridge Buskers. John, who composed this familiar bourrée? That wasn't John whistling, that was John thinking.
I've no idea.
Well, he also wrote a three-volume Syntagma Musicum, Dances from Terpsichore. No, I have to tell you, Michael Pretorius.
Ooh. That
popular. Frank, how did this piece get its name?
Is
it was written for the title music for the BBC programme, 1 Minute, Please. It's called The Minute Waltz by Chopin.
Yes, and someone thought wrongly that you can play it properly in a minute. You can't. It takes about 1 minute, 20-something seconds. Ian, where will I find this music?
Wouldn't it be fascinating if magpies sang like that?
Yes, that's right.
Yes, it's the Thieving Magpie by Rossini.
Yes, the Thieving Magpie. How delighted I was when Mrs. Gillespie wrote to me from Melbourne in Australia, and she actually enclosed the local newspaper radio column that listed a performance of the Heaving Magpie. The programme had been phoned in, I think. You know, so
doing an operatic overture like that recalls a wonderful occasion in the Hoffnung concerts years ago when the Dolmetsch Ensemble of Recorders played the 1812 overture just on recorders and had little pop guns with corks for the cameras.
Yes.
Great performance.
Great fun, yeah. Dennis, the Cambridge Buskers again. Dennis, that word busker, can you suggest an origin for it, to busk, busker?
Not really. I was just thinking was if the kind of prod noses of the time, who want to chase the buskers out of London's underground have their way, we would never get music like that.
No.
All the other musicians who pick up a crumb down there. I've always thought it was connected with busking, with buskins that actors wear, or used to wear.
Well, I don't know. Do me. The Oxford Dictionary gives busk perhaps from obsolete French busque, to prowl. Chambers Dictionary gives the Spanish word buscar, to seek. In jazz musicians' parlance, of course, busk means to play by ear, you know, to play without music, which Americans call fake. They say, I can fake it, I can remember
it. Looking for it. You're still buscar in the sense of seeking. You're seeking it.
Busking doesn't have to be music, does it? I mean, it can be a...
No, you can busk a line from Hamlet or something, can't you?
It could be chained to the pavement as a busker.
Wrong. It's a well-known fact, well-known certainly to Ian, that performers can suffer from occupational disorders. Relaxed throat, for instance. I apologise for even mentioning it, Ian. Instrumentalists have their problems too, like, they tell me, trumpeter's lip, clarinetist's thumb, and violinist's neck. Not to mention the disorder that gave rise to a famous Hermione Gingold song, cellist's groin. But I ask myself now, and you, why should these occupational hazards be confined to musicians? Why not critics, or disc jockeys, or quizmasters, or producers, or agents? Can I have a suggestion or two? These occupational disorders. Anybody got an idea?
Well, if you have quizmasters, you could suffer from Dennis Elbow, from elbowing the songs I suggest to you.
Yes.
I suppose sponsors could suffer from hyperactivity.
Oh, yes.
The disc jockeys quick of the neck. Because when they've forgotten what record they've put on the turntable, they have to try and read the label of the record going round, which is, in fact, impossible.
Oh, there's a particular form of ballet dancer's fatigue called jeté lag.
Oh, yes, we're warming to our task a bit now.
Jammed fingers. Because as you know, Stephen, that if you've got a pianist, you mustn't have fingers wider than the white notes.
No.
Otherwise, you can't play one at a time. And the other thing is if you have fingers narrower than the gaps between, you can get your fingers fast lodged between the notes.
Very nasty. Yes, yes. There is pianist glissando thumb. It's all right on the white notes. It's murder on the black ones.
Did you know that Percy Grainger used to have a handkerchief on a piece of elastic. And when he had to do a glissando, he got the handkerchief out so as to protect his fingers, and then when he finished, the handkerchief went flipped back into his breast pocket.
No.
I used to wake him up, didn't you?
Yes, no, I didn't know that. Nobody knew that. Every few weeks over the decades that we've been doing these shows, I've repeated the fact that Frank, John, Ian and Dennis are not challenged to remember these four final songs. On the contrary, they choose them, and I'm the one who's challenged to recall them or track them down. For instance, Frank's choice for this week, lovely song too, Music Maestro, Please.
Tonight, I mustn't think of her. Music Maestro, please. Tonight I must forget how much I need her. So, Mr. Leader, play your lilting melodies. Ragtime, swing any old thing to help me ease the pain that solitude can bring. She used to like waltzes, so please don't play a waltz. She danced divinely, and I loved her so. But there I go, tonight I must think of her. No more memories. Swing out. Tonight I must forget. Music Maestro, please.
John, singing unaccompanied, has a most beautiful melody by Johann Sebastian Bach.
It's a little love ditty, and it's rather rare for old Bach. Willst du dein Herz mir schenken, so fang es heimlich an, dass unser beiden Denken niemand erraten kann. Die Liebe muss bei beiden allzeit verschwiegen sein. Drum schließt die größten Freuden in deinem Herzen ein.
I really don't know how Dennis and I have the nerve to follow that.
Well, we have another little love ditty, don't we?
Will you be singing in English on this occasion?
We'll do this one in English, I think. Don't do your courting round the gate post. Don't do your spooning in the street. You can't expect the girl to think that love's all right with the handle of the door in her back all night. When the gales are a-blowing and a-snowing, it's bound to make the poor girl sore. And the lump of lamb you've chosen's not so tasty when it's frozen. It's a cold job cuddling round the door.
A lot of your songs have to do with courting, don't they, Dennis?
Always unsuccessful courting.
That's right, yes. Ian's closing song this week was written by a strange man, a New York hippie called Eden Arbez, who refused to have his name spelt with capital letters because he said only the Almighty deserved uppercase letters. He wrote this lovely song.
There was a boy, a very strange, enchanted boy. They say he wandered very far, very far, over land and sea. A little shy and sad of eye, but very wise was he. And then one day,
A magic day he passed my way, and while we spoke of many things, fools and kings, this he said to me: the greatest thing you'll ever learn is just to love and be loved in return. Greatest thing you'll ever learn is just to love and be loved in return.
Just to love and be loved in return. Not a bad closing thought as I report this week's victory for Ian Wallace and Dennis Norton. Bye.
Taking part in My Music with John Amos, Frank Muir, Ian Wallace and Dennis Norton. The chairman was Steve Race. The questions were compiled by Steve Race, and the program was produced by Richard Edis.